The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Tell me what's going on.
I never thought I'd be calling you.
I hope you're going to agree with me.
Well, no, I'm sorry.
I'm not into predictions, but you want me to make a prediction?
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
Yeah, I really didn't want to call you about this.
All right, let's answer your question and give you some good news.
Yay.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
You seem like an honest guy.
A lot of people suffer when they have to listen to me. So at least you're getting your daily dose of suffering right now.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Why is there an expiration date on sour cream? Right? I mean, if sour cream goes bad, there's an expiration date on it. What happens? It becomes sweet? I'm all confused by these things, and I try not to spend too much time thinking about them because I've got a show to do. Good to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In with my compatriots there in Ann Arbor, Andrew Krucek, producer man, Eric Dumont, call screamer man, and all the EWTN folks who make this possible as we are a co-production of the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, some 400-plus stations, as well as Ave Maria Radio Communications. Consider it a great privilege to be involved in the good works of these folks. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get onto the line. Lines. If you have a question about something in your life that matters, just want another opinion. We're not going to solve the problem. But we could put in motion something that would solve the problem, the ripple effect. And then if we really do a good job, the cascade effect, which means if you make a small change, lots of times in time, big changes occur. So you can also help someone else. A lot of people make comments about various things that I think are very, very helpful. You know, I had a lady yesterday. I'm digressing for a moment here. She sent me, I was talking about how I said that a lot of people are getting out of the habit of going to Mass. She said one of the reasons that she doesn't go is because the way they have it set up, if anyone in attendance at the Mass tests positive for COVID, everybody there has to quarantine for 14 days. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? You could have been 40 yards away from the person. You had a mask on, for heaven's sake. Quarantine. Now, I'm hoping she misunderstood, but I don't think she did. She said, I can't quit work for 2 weeks. Can't shut myself down for 2 weeks, especially on the remote odds, far odds, to say that this person is now a carrier. And that's not a point I had even thought of, to tell you the truth. Anyway, good enough. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get onto the program. I welcome your calls, not only for questions that you might have about something particular to you or something generic in the world of psychology as it intersects with the world of faith, or help for someone else, or comments that can be useful. Or the rule is, if you disagree or tell me I'm wrong, we put you straight to the front. I learned something about myself. You know, circumstances make you learn about yourself. And if you pay attention, you can grow. If you are open to what the circumstances say about your personhood, your way, your thinking, it's called experience, right? Life experience. As you get older, you're supposed to get a little more wiser. More wiser? Well, maybe you don't get better in your grammar. And I learned something today. Didn't like it, digesting it right now. Years ago, I used to travel. I mean, before COVID, I still traveled a lot to give speaking engagements. And at that time, there was no cell phones. So I would leave and until I got to a phone where I could make a collect call or filed a payphone somewhere. My wife didn't know where I was. It was just scattered about the U.S. Life was sans cell phone. Well, now, of course, my smartphone is my constant companion. And it's an intrusive companion. It truly is. Wherever I am, it either dings for a text. The emails just accumulate so rapidly. Within hours, there's more emails. And the phone rings or buzzes or whatever it does. I left the house today heading for the office. Saw clients this morning. No phone. I forgot it. Now, I wouldn't go so far as to say I had a panic attack. Calm myself down rather quickly. But I immediately started thinking, well, what effect will this have? No phone. Of course, I think I'm so terribly important that, oh, heavens, if anybody needs to get a hold of me and I can't respond within an hour, oh, wouldn't that be awful? So I had to deal with that one. Then, interestingly enough, people either text me or send some message, oftentimes during the program, for or against something I've said. I usually take a look at it, see what they have to say. There's not going to be any of that because there's no phone with me. When I got in, Andrew Krucek, my producer man, said, "You didn't answer your phone." And I said, "Well, there's a real reason for that," because he had an issue that had come up and we had to deal with it. Well, we couldn't deal with it. And my phone's at home, sitting on the counter. I hope. I can't even call myself to find out where my phone is, because I don't have my phone. And I was going to ask my wife to go get it for me, but I don't have a phone to call her to ask her to go get it. So I will be essentially without the phone here for several hours. Okay. Many of you are thinking, so what, Dr. Ray? I'm not joined at the hip with my phone. I don't even answer it half the time. I understand. And what I'm learning about me is, as much as I say that phone can be ever so intrusive, without it, I had to adapt. I had to adjust. Sometimes during the program here on a break, I'll check email and see. Can't do that now. Sometimes people are in semi-emergency situations. I can't do that now. Sometimes people will say, "I sent you an email 2 hours ago and you didn't respond." Well, I can't do that now. A lot of times I will edit a book I'm working on and I will use the thesaurus that's on the phone. I can't do that now. What I'm learning here is that I quickly, within the last 15 years, well, it started 15 years ago. That's not quick, but it was quick when it started. This thing has become my third kidney. I don't like that. And I don't like the fact that I had to calm myself down. Not calm. I mean, that makes it sound like I'm unsettled and anxious. I'm not. But I don't like the fact that I had to think it through and say, well, it's okay. I won't have my phone for several hours. Okay. Now, does business come through on that phone? Yes, it does. I can't remember the last time the business was so important on that phone that if I didn't respond in 4 minutes, there were going to be catastrophic consequences. Now, if for some reason my wife needed to get hold of me, well, she would probably see the phone sitting on the counter. And there are still phones in places where I am. I'm at the studio. We have a studio phone. She could call here. So really, I learned about myself. And I learned that somehow I've gotten to the point where this phone is probably too important. I could have said it intellectually the last 15 years. Oh, yeah. You know, I think I've let the phone become too important. But this time, and this is, by the way, the longest I've never had the phone with me. And that says something, too, doesn't it? Now, some of you can't relate to this. You're thinking, I'm not attached to that phone at all. I got a flip phone. I don't even have the internet on it. You're thinking. But others of you know exactly what I'm talking about. And I just don't like when life forces me to learn something about myself that I otherwise wouldn't emotionally learn if I didn't have to. 877-573-7825, 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get onto the program. I am Dr. Ray. Thank you for joining me.
He was absolutely the most amazing man that America has ever created, ever.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
What are some major offenses against the Eighth Commandment? The Catholic Catechism states that false witness, that is, lying in court, and perjury, which is lying under oath, are especially grave sins because they are stated publicly. Such false statements contribute to the condemnation of the innocent and the exoneration of the guilty or the increased sentence of the accused. If we assume the moral fault of another without sufficient evidence, we commit the sin of rash judgment. We offend by the sin of detraction when we reveal the faults of another without an objectively valid reason to someone who did not know them. Calumny is the sin of lying about another person, thereby harming their reputation and contributing to occasions of false judgments regarding them. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Hi there, I'm Dr. Greg Popchak.
And I'm Lisa Popchak.
Research shows that when families openly live and share their faith together, they're more able to respond positively to the challenges they face every day.
So if you're looking for help in creating that joyful place where each member of your family experiences life as a gift from God, then you will want to check out our book, Discovering God Together, The Catholic Guide for Raising Faithful Kids.
You can find this book on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
Oh, I love listening to you. You have a personality just like my father, and I love it, and my father loves you.
Ain't that the way it is? Oh, she could have said, you have a personality just like my brother. My younger brother. No. It's like my father. Could have been worse. Could have said, just like my great-grandfather. Okie dokie. Let's go to Joyce from Des Moines. I always... Now, you know, there's an S on the end of that, Eric. It is M-O-I-N-E-S. Excuse me. I'm just getting to people to say, God bless me. Hi, Joyce.
Hi.
Hello. Hey, Joyce, I remember your email. It was one I asked you to call, and you did. Thank you for doing that.
Oh, no problem.
And how long? What's worse, that you see your husband giving his family priority over you, or you see him telling them things that you very much would like he'd keep between the two of you?
I think keeping things between the two of us is the bigger issue.
Okay. What do you think his motive is? Obviously, you've asked him about it, and how does he explain it?
It's not about me, was his exact words.
The things that he tells them, meaning when somebody says it's not all about you, that can mean don't be self-centered, or whatever I'm telling them, you're not involved in it. Which is it?
I think it's his feeling is I'm being self-centered when actually I'm just a very private person. I don't have a Facebook. And I know from previous years and issues in the past that if it's told to his sister or his mother, it's being told to the entire family, aunts, uncles, cousins, whoever. It's just a grapevine because these people don't have lives.
Does he not see that?
He sees it as me just being wrong. You know, he doesn't see it.
In other words, what's the big deal, Joyce? That's how he sees it.
Yeah.
How many years?
Together, 21, married, 16.
Been that way for 16 years?
Well, I just, over the years, it just became progressively clearer and more obvious as time went on. So guess what I'm saying is he got to the point where he reached a comfort level to where that's just the way it's going to be.
And obviously, you've made it as best you could make it clear. Please don't do that. You've probably brought that up for 16 years. And, of course, he just thinks you're wrong. You're making a big deal out of it.
All right.
This is my family, and I want to share things with them because it matters. Does he think, Joyce, that you're not the greatest person to be married to, so therefore this is one way he can let other people know what he puts up with?
Could be. We've had issues. We were separated for a year and a half, just reunited in March. So there's no telling what's been told, what's been said.
Mm-hmm.
We are of different faiths. I'm a Catholic convert. So what I believe is to keep trying and not to divorce, but it's getting painful, too painful to continue it, you know, at times.
Joyce, this is going to sound funny to you. It doesn't have to be painful. It's painful because you're viewing it as he shouldn't be doing this. They'll think less of me. This isn't fair. This isn't right. I don't do this to him. So you've been thinking that for nigh on to 16 years. If you've decided, yeah, I'm going to stay in this marriage, I'm going to make the best of it, I'm going to just endure, persevere, then the one thing you're going to have to let go is he sees nothing wrong with what he's doing, and you will have to accept that they're going to think what they think about you on the basis of what he tells them, and there's nothing you can do about it. Every time it comes back to you that he's done this again, then it just opens up the scab. Here we go again. He did it again. But at some point, my dear, some point you're going to have to say to yourself over and over and over and over and over and over again, I'm going to have to persevere through this because he's not going to stop. And here's the other thing. Here's the other thing I would say, and I know you've done this. You take it very personally. In other words, he doesn't care about my feelings. He doesn't care what I would like. He doesn't care that it hurts me. He doesn't care that he's being very unfair to me. He doesn't care about any of it. I know you're thinking that. Maybe it would be better to interpret it as maybe not so much he doesn't care. He just wants to do what he wants to do, and he's got some family reason for sharing these things. And it isn't a matter of I'm just gonna make Joyce feel terrible, and I don't care that she feels terrible. It could simply be, well, and it's not simple, but it could be in part that this is just who he is regarding this stuff, and some of it is not related to that he wants to hurt you. He just wants to do it because he wants to get in on his family's good side. Might have to start looking at it that way. At least it'll take some of the pain away. And here's the other thing. Get it in your head, again, over and over and over and over and over again, that you're going to have to not care what they think of you on the basis of what he tells them.
Okay.
Okay, dear. And I know you may have called thinking, Dr. A, tell me how to make him stop this. I don't know if you can. I think he has to come to that realization on his own, because you've certainly tried. You've given it your best shot. Joyce, thank you so much. And thank you for your persevering patience in trying to hold things together. That's heroic. God bless you, dear.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
God bless you. God bless you. Oh, boy, oh, boy. What are you going to do? I look at people in marriages where they have to endure this kind of stuff. And there's no change in sight, at least for the moment. Doesn't mean things can't change down the road. And it doesn't mean that at some point the family dynamics will change between Joyce's husband and his family. That can happen. But we really don't know his motive. And his motive. And again, I didn't like that sign that they've had struggles in their marriage, which is therefore he's looking for allies. You know, let me tell you what I have to live with, kind of thing. And I think that means Joyce is the perhaps stronger partner in all of this. All righty. Well, Rosie shouldn't have to put up with this. I love the name Rosie. That's my little granddaughter's name. That is my grandmother's name. Beautiful name. Hi, Rosie.
Hey. Hey, Dr. Rakes. My condolences on losing your phone.
Oh, it's horrible. I wanted to turn around and not do this show. That's it.
Well, I'm glad you didn't, because I got to ask you about my 8-year-old.
Yeah.
Man, every time she gets asked to do a chore, and that's every day after school, not immediately, but a while after, my leg hurts, my arm hurts. Mm. If that doesn't work, she cries, tears.
And
I wind up, in order to get her to do the things, which is like her one math homework sheet, her emptying the dishwasher chore, and her little 7 minutes of practicing piano, I wind up like basically holding her hand through the whole thing.
No, that's the first thing we're going to stop, Rosie. Rosie, that's the first thing we're going to stop.
Okay.
You've trained her. You have trained her.
Yeah, I must.
Well, of course. If she resists, you're going to step in and you're going to do everything you can to negotiate and try to plead with and convince and hold her hand and walk her through it. Nah. We're going to throw her a curveball. You ready?
Okay.
All right. Now, Rosie, I know that you are smarter than an 8-year-old. I think. I am smarter than an 8-year-old. My wife says I am pretty much equal to an 11-year-old. So I got her by 3 years. Here's what we're going to do. What's your little daughter's name?
Teresa.
Teresa, honey, you don't have to do it. If you don't want to do it, if you don't want to put the dishes in the dishwasher, that's okay. That's okay. Well, one other thing I have to tell you. You don't have anything until you don't have. No, I'm talking like we're talking to Teresa. One other thing I'm going to tell you, Teresa. You don't have anything until you do. And one more thing, please. If you start to throw a little hissy fit because of this, I'm just going to keep track of how many minutes that is. And for every minute, that's 5 sentences you're going to have to write.
Mm-hmm.
So Teresa, honey, it's okay. You just keep doing that. No problem. You don't have to do it. You're not going to have any privileges until you do, of any kind. None. Zero. Zippo. Also, 1 minute equals 5 sentences. So I'll just keep track. Yeah. That ought to work. That's the ticket. Thanks, Rosie. 877-573-7825, 877-57-EQUAL. Want to hear from you.
Visit Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
Vatican II teaches that. Every baptized person is a participant in the threefold office of Jesus, which is priest, prophet, and king. So as priest, Christ is a sanctifier. He effects a reconciliation between divinity and humanity, right, by his great sacrifice on the cross. Every baptized person does indeed participate in that, in the measure that we all have that calling to reconcile divinity and humanity, to bring God to people and people to God. That's true of every baptized person. Vatican II further specifies that the ordained priesthood is different, not only in degree, but in kind. And it has to do with the identification between the ordained priest, I think, and the Mass, and a unique relationship to the sacraments. Every baptized person has a task of reconciling divinity and humanity. The ordained priest does it in this sort of heightened sacramental and Eucharistic way.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
I tell oftentimes an experience that I had at Divine Child when I was a young priest, 1 year ordained. First time I ever really saw the power of the Blessed Sacrament. And we simply exposed the Blessed Sacrament at the end of Mass one night. I encouraged people. I said, you know what? We've been in the habit of praying over people after Mass. I said, we're not going to do that this week. I'm just going to invite people to come on up and pray if they want to pray. And I put the Blessed Sacrament on the altar. I kneeled down. As I kneeled down, the church is in the sanctuary, the whole church. And as I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at the people there, and I'm looking at Jesus under the appearance of bread there, I saw the Lord standing on the altar. And he's just standing there looking out at all the people. And then at a certain point, he turned towards me and he just bowed and he says, don't you see how easy this is? You don't have to do anything. You just have to put me out. You put me out and I will work.
Wondering why is it that the alphabet is in the order that it's in? Ever think about that? How was it that that evolved into that order? I gotta think it's because of that song. You know? No other explanation. Tyler, calling from Ohio, where for the most part in Ohio there is a statewide mandatory mask. Even for little kids. Hi, Tyler.
Sir. Thanks. How you doing?
I'm okay. Thanks for the call.
Well, Dr. Ray, my wife is a science teacher in high school, and she does a lunch period. And she has noticed that it has been dead silent since they've started school. Kids are not willing to talk. They'd rather be on their phones. We're concerned it's going to go into the grade schools. Our children, which we have four, two, second grader and a kindergarten, are going to a Catholic private school. And the principal, and to be honest, our priest, is very, very upset about all this. So much, in fact, that I've gotten approached about not wearing a mask when I've been outside. Social distancing, all the requirements, but they said I still need to require a mask. Because of this, we are switching up pickups so we can be even more socially distant, quote unquote. And we have a PTA meeting tonight. We're concerned and we're asking your advice. Should we start pushing back because we're afraid? I believe the term is Marxism, where basically higher ups, officials, government pushes and pushes and pushes until they get what they want. Then they stop and then they push again. So should we push our PTA and our priest and our principal to get back to normal?
No. And that sounds funny coming from a guy like me who is just absolutely stunned at the sheep-like behavior of our culture. And I'm not the only one. Did you hear what Attorney William Barr said last week?
No, I did not.
He said that barring slavery in the U.S., the COVID response has been the biggest assault on individual freedoms since then.
Hmm.
So, I don't think that your school or your pastor will say, yeah, we don't need to do this, because they look all around them and they're convinced that this is absolutely necessary for little kids. So you're faced with a choice. And the choice is, what are they going to require? And will you home educate in the meantime? I think that's what you're facing. You're not going to convince them. You can try it. You can say, what's the rationale for this? And you can go equipped with statistics that are very clear that the children catching the illness and passing it on are just so low. Just so low. But they're, it sounds like they're acting out of emotions and a fear, which is pretty much pervasive. It's all over. It's just everywhere. We just had a local school, because there was one kid or somebody who tested positive. That's it. They shut the school down. Shut the school down.
Right.
It's like, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. And, you know, the survival rate of COVID is well over 99%. And it's even way higher than that among kids. So given all that, I think you can just get to their rationale. What is your reasoning on this? Well, the research is pretty clear. The research is clear. We're following the science. That's the standard thing. We're following the science. And the science is all over the place. But we're following the science that essentially says, you know, we need to protect. And then you say, well, will you be requiring kids of what age to wear masks?
Right.
And what your wife is observing is sad, but real, which is we've mm-hmm. pretty much done a devastating number on social interactions. I was at Wendy's yesterday, and I cracked a joke with the guy at the counter. And I forgot he couldn't see my face, because normally I would have smiled. And I was smiling, but I forgot I had a mask on. He just looked at me. No idea how to interpret what I said, no idea to smile, no idea to have a good moment together. And I just said, oh, yeah, I forgot. You can't see me smiling. Yeah. And plus, there was plexiglass between him and I, too. So apparently, you know, the plexiglass isn't enough. It's practically bulletproof. Isn't enough. I know. I don't know when it's going to end. I at one time, Tyler, I truly thought I was naive. I thought, okay, well, we'll deal with this for some weeks, maybe a couple of months, and then it'll be it. No. I don't know where the end is, and that's what I think you have to take into account with your school, because I think they're going to head in the direction of masks.
Hmm. So and they're saying, unfortunately, you don't think the Catholics can push back hard enough to get the change going.
There's not enough of us.
Hmm.
That's what I'm saying.
Darn.
and I think that even if you bring up the issue of, well, will the kids, well, are there certain vulnerable kids, are there certain anxious kids who are going to be wearing a mask, who are going to think, am I in danger? Could I die? Could my mommy die? Why are we having to do this? Now, not all kids will do that. I'm rather surprised at how many of the kids just kind of went with the flow.
Right.
But I have heard kids who are scared. Some of them don't even want to go to school because mm-hmm. they're scared. Because to them, the mask represents risk. The mask represents danger. It's floating. Right. The virus is floating in the air, and it's going to get us all. I know that's the mindset out there, sadly. So see what happens as you question them. But I think what's going to happen, Tyler, is you're going to find out they're heading in that direction and there ain't nothing you could do about it. And even if you said, well, I guess I'll just withdraw my kids for the meantime, they'll say, well, you have to do what you have to do. That's what they'll say.
Right.
Yeah. They won't look at you like, oh,
thank you
boy.
So much, Dr. Ray.
Okay, buddy. Hey, call me back and let me know how it went. Would you? Would you do that?
Yeah.
I appreciate
will do that.
That. All right. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I got to see if I was somewhat accurate in anticipating the response or not. Because I do know that right now, anybody who speaks out loud against what is the acceptable narrative is impugned. I do know also that there are a lot of people who don't agree with the acceptable narrative. Those numbers are growing. If you've seen some of the protest movements in foreign countries, they're huge. Haven't done anything. The government pretty much still is doing what it's going to do. But for Attorney General William Barr to say this has been the biggest assault on civil liberties since slavery, I'm afraid I have to agree with him. It is huge. All right. More of your calls when we come back. I'm Dr. Ray, 877-573-7825, 877-57-EQUAL. I'm Dr. Ray.
Call to Communion.
Through EWTN Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world, because we're all children of God.
Call to Communion with Dr. David Anders. This afternoon, 2 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
The breadth of power that liberal governors such as Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan and Andrew Cuomo in New York seek to wield against private citizens during this current pandemic is frightening. Contrary to their views, our federal constitutional rights don't go away in an emergency. These governors feel only a nominal constraint by our Constitution, as evidenced by the restrictions they have imposed on our liberty. Under the banner of public health, they believe that their power is plenary and that the Constitution has little role, if any, in curtailing that power. They are mistaken. Indeed, there is no pandemic exception to the fundamental liberties guaranteed by the Constitution. If the courts, and more importantly, we the people who ultimately control the fate of these politicians at the ballot box, were to simply accept the governor's actions and acquiesce to their power grab, then it is the fiat of the governors and not the Constitution that is the supreme law of the land. We aren't willing to surrender our freedoms so easily. We filed multiple federal civil rights lawsuits against both governors in federal courts in Michigan and New York. In the final analysis, if we don't demand our God-given inalienable rights, then they will be lost. Fight for freedom or lose it. It's that simple. I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center and its fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
Dr. Ray Guarini, thanks for joining me on The Doctor's In, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. All right, a lot of calls up there. Let's see what we can do. Denise from Chicago. A stubborn 26-year-old who thinks he knows everything, but I repeat myself. Hi, Denise.
Hi there. How are you?
I am fine, my dear. Does this 26-year-old live with you?
Well, no, but if he has to, you know, come to Chicago, then yeah, we're on the same roof. Well, right now he's still in Atlanta trying to hold things down, but, you know, at my expense.
Hey, whoa. What kind of your expense?
Well, he's a late graduate from college, had an interesting journey, but he made it. And so he's 26, and so he was a 2020 graduate. And, of course, you know, with the pandemic hitting, it knocked down a lot of things in terms of job, you know, his jobs and everything. And so he's having to have to work at a little restaurant that's not far from his apartment. But, you know, he's financially, he's not stable. And so I'm the one that has to kind of hold down both households right now. Mm-hmm. And I also have a younger daughter.
You said something interesting here, Denise.
Okay.
You said, I'm the one who has to hold down both households.
Get me, Dr. Ray, get me.
Yeah, you think I don't listen. I listen to every word. I communicate with women. So
yes,
why do you think you have to sustain both households?
Because I'm one of these extremely doting moms, and I'm going to cry because he hasn't been given like the most fair shake in life in his educational journey, and I just feel like I want to just at least get him on his feet for success, and he is trying, but you know, during the pandemic, it's just a really rough time because I'm in the entertainment business. And so I've sung for the Queen of England, I've sung for President George W. Bush and so forth. But right now with the pandemic, you can't sing for anybody. And so, you know, my finances have changed and he had so many wonderful, things in place, you know, before, you know, COVID. And so I don't know.
You got a time limit on it? Denise, you got a time limit on it? In other words, all right, this is not indefinite here. Given my circumstances financially and given yours, you at age 26, my son, whether life has not been fair to you or not, as mom, doting mom, has decided, is going to have to end or at least be curtailed. Weaning from mom's financial support.
Yeah. I did have a conversation. I just left Atlanta yesterday. I said to him, you know, my plan is, you know, you should come to Chicago, find some work there. At least you have a roof over your head. I'm paying for one roof at this point. He doesn't want to come to Chicago. So I just said to him.
Well, he made his choice then.
I put in front of you what I feel is best and what God, you know, will have me to do. And so if you choose something different, then I'm letting you know I have to let you make that choice and you have to live with that choice. And I'm not saying this in an ugly way. I'm saying this I can't go any further. This is all
well,
I
now,
can do.
Now, Denise, you just answered the question.
Okay.
Which tells me that it wasn't that you didn't decide what to do. It's that you were asking, is it okay that I do that?
Well, it's a little of both because I just kind of came to that parting of the Red Sea, you know, like yesterday, because I really dropped down a lot of money while I was there. And, you know, and I could see that I can't, you know, I can't do both of these. I can't live where I am and for him to live the way he wants to live, you know.
Well, and so something tells me, I'm going to have to let you go, honey, because I'm up against the break. But something tells me that this has kind of been a history of his, which is he's not totally grown up about making his
You're
own
absolutely
way.
Right.
Oh,
You're
how do I know these things? I have to at least do something helpful here because you answered your own question.
But it's so hard for me to let go. It really is.
Well, that's the problem because I know you're thinking, I'm making this judgment. What if it doesn't work out? You know, what if the kid doesn't make it?
Yeah.
Well, you got to be convinced as a parent this is not your fault. And I always tell parents in these situations, you got to sometimes decide whether you're making it worse by what you're doing.
Yeah, you're right.
Man, you've told me I'm right. You have told me I'm right three times. Whoa.
Yeah, you're right four times.
You have gone, this is just my opinion in this very brief conversation, but it sounds like, I trust you to be accurate in this, it sounds like you've gone over and above the call of duty.
I have.
This ain't a 19-year-old kid. This is somebody's 26.
Yeah.
And you said, here's an option, and he said no. And you said, okay.
Yeah.
And I gave you the option. By the way, you know, if you'd have sent 10% of that money toward me, do you realize how much more grateful I'd be about that?
Well, don't you worry about that.
Dang. All right, sweetheart. Thanks for the call. I'll talk to you.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. This is Dr. Ray. I'll be right back.
Why don't you gentlemen relax?
What was that all about?
Dr. Ray has more great advice soon. Don't go anywhere.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is the Evidences for Christianity. Some people will say that religion is personal and therefore outside the purview of objective examination. As Christians, we cherish the feelings and impressions we get from having a personal relationship with God. So how do we know such feelings and impressions are trustworthy? St. Paul says to test everything. And how do we test subjective feelings? A well-formed conscience is a start, but how do we properly form our conscience? Again, St. Paul writes, study to show yourself approved, rightly interpreting the word of truth. And what is the foundation of that truth? How about the historical facts, archaeological evidences, and the logical reasons that established the Church of Jesus Christ? To explore more, go to AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at AveMariaRadio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
That sounds like that old Beatles song, doesn't it? She was just 17. Dr. Ray Guarendi, thanks for joining me. For those of you, as always, on the line at the end of the program, you call back, you're first up. Your time is valuable also. Which means if I call back, I'm first up too. I never call me back, but... Linda from Lakewood, Colorado. We have a Lakewood in Ohio. It's over on the west side of Cleveland. Two things here that jump out at me. One, her grandson is 9 years old and he has a phone. Oh, boy, oh, boy. But he also is on his phone when he's with grandma. And she says, hey, I can't even interact with my grandson. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How are you?
I am fine. Now, he, I assume, has a smartphone, a computer in his hand, huh?
Well, it's kind of strange. It's not like a real phone. He can't make phone calls, but he can has certain apps, like he plays Minecraft, and he can kind of watch YouTube. So he can do limited stuff on it.
Well, you watching YouTube ain't limited.
That's true.
You can get anything you want to watch on YouTube.
And he loves YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
But
more than grandma. So
yes. Mm. But the frustrating thing for me is I try and limit it. I mean, I would love to say, okay, no phones at my house. But I understand I'm from the older generation, and it's not really maybe feasible. I want him to enjoy and come to my house.
Okay.
So far
now, Linda, now doggone it, Linda. You said about three things I'm going to argue with.
Okay.
One, you said, I would love to have him not be on his phone at my house. Okay. You were basically saying, I have a preference. I don't want him on the phone. You have every right to do that. Two, I'm from the older generation. Yes, that tells me you got a lot more wisdom than a 9-year-old. See, what you've done is you've said, okay, I might not be with it. Because being with it means a 9-year-old can go anywhere he wants on YouTube on his phone. See, this is part of the problem in our culture. The older folks who have the wisdom are deferring to the cultural rules. And the cultural rule says a 9-year-old should be able to be on his phone as much as he wants and watch whatever he wants whenever he's with anybody. And when we have folks like yourself who are saying this is affecting a relationship, we don't allow you to make that judgment. That's two. And the third one, I have totally forgotten because I rambled on too much on the first two. And that's part of my age. My dear, I think you have absolutely every right as soon as he walks in that house to say, oh, give me your phone, son. Absolutely right. My newest book, Raising Upright Kids in an Upside Down World, talks about technology. And I talk about all the grandparents who have a rule. You come to the house, no matter what age you are, phones go on a basket. Now, someone might say, well, then they won't come. Well, that's a parental problem then. If you got a kid that you're going to let say, I don't want to go to grandma's house because she doesn't let me be on my phone for the 2 hours I'm there, then that is a real parental problem. That parent's got to have a little bit of backbone. So
right. Well, sometimes, I mean, I'm watching him overnight, so it is, he might be here for a day or, you know, long time, but.
Give it to him for a half hour or hour. You set the terms.
Well, that's what I try and do. And I know that's part of my problem is I'll say, okay, 10 or 15 minutes and I'll set the timer and then I get busy and I get distracted. And before I know it, it's been 20 minutes, half an hour. And then it's like, I just have to finish this, just 5 more minutes. And I'm like, okay, but then you have to give it to me in 5 more minutes. And of course I walk away. And of course,
you know what? He doesn't just have to finish this. Think about this a second. I just have to finish this. Is this some kind of school assignment that I have to finish this game? He's already 20 minutes past what you said. I would say something like, hey, son, please give me that, because if you don't have it the rest of the time you're here.
Right.
But you know why?
I know. I have to be firm.
It comes down to what you said about 22 sentences ago, which was, I know I'm the older generation, and I recognize this is what they do. Yeah, but you know the thing, Linda? So much of what they do is not good. And we, as the older people, used to know that. We used to say, if we allow them to set the terms on what they wish to do, they're kids. They're going to make bad judgments. It's up to us to say this is not a good thing. But what we do is we yield.
That's very true. I know. Mm-hmm.
I know, my dear. And I will say this. I think you're going to have a bigger problem with your grandson. And that is that at age 9, he can go in a lot of places where he shouldn't be going. And it's only a matter of time before this really causes problems.
They do have some parental controls on it. I don't know how much, but I've talked to my kids about that. And I think they do have some parental controls. I don't know if they're as good as they need to be. But
think about this. If you were to allow your grandson to be on that phone, he'd be on it the whole time, right?
Oh, definitely, yes.
So what it does, it essentially narrows his diversity as being a 9-year-old kid, that he doesn't throw the ball off the wall, he doesn't go outside, he doesn't color, he doesn't read, he doesn't do anything.
Right.
I got to believe that the parents don't have the same uneasiness about this that you do. And I would hope that in time they develop that, because it's only going to get more seductive for that little guy.
Right. They put some controls on, like, okay, you've had it for a while, you've got to turn off and go outside and do things. Mm-hmm. And they do that, but they're not as, one of them is more strict than the other. So he knows that, and he plays on the one.
And you know what I would say if I were the parent, because I said this with my children, there ain't no way a 9-year-old's going to have a phone.
I know.
Never. Never. But I would say 90% of parents don't think like that. All righty. Thank you, dear, for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate your help.
Oh, shoot. I ran out of time because I had some calls still up there. And I know Susie said the situation is ridiculous, especially for kids in high school, regarding the parent-teacher conferences, regarding the masks, regarding the lack of socialization, regarding all of the unintended consequences of it all. Oh, well. Oh, we'll look back one day. I'm Dr. Ray, and I thank you so much for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. Walk with God, and I don't think you need to keep a 6-foot distance from God. Last I looked.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.